John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is our turn again. It's a Friday, 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in Studio 2.
Do you know what happens this weekend?
No, what happens this weekend?
Start of three weekends of St. Patrick's Day parades.
Oh. And you have your green tie on.
I have my green tie because I'm doing something with the Sierra Club lately, but I will wear a green tie. You can rest assured.
Only in New York.
Sunnyside on Sunday and Far Rockaway on Saturday. And then some other borough parades the following weekend. And the weekend after that, if I remember correctly, is St. Patrick's Day actually comes on a Saturday or Sunday this weekend. And Saturday is the day we celebrate.
Saturday, yes.
Saturday.
My dear wife is born on St. Patrick's Day. So that's
Friendly Sons of the Irish the night before, which is always a fun dinner. And, you know, it's a great time. Everybody's a little bit Irish and has one extra drink. And
you are also off to our friends at Fairway today over in Red Hook.
I am
right
going.
After the show.
Absolutely. Fairway in Red Hook. When I was there, when they originally opened, they had something like 350 different kinds of cheeses. I just remember the number. One was yak.
You didn't try them
yak
all.
Cheese from Outer Mongolia or something. Or
it is weird how the mind works and remembers certain things.
No, but I do remember I had a bagel with a schmear there, and it was very good. Not good for my waistline.
I'm sure you'll get another bagel with a schmear.
I'm looking forward to that.
Later on today.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sequestration thing, any effects on the city?
Well, it depends how long. If it lasts a few weeks, no. If it does, yeah, we get, 10-12% of our budget from the federal government. Not all of that's going to be cut back, but there would be effects, not good effects. But in the context of, is anything going to change tomorrow? Or are we going to run out of money tomorrow? I'm sure I'll get that question at the press conference. No, these are long-term things. And I think most people assume that in the end, Congress and the president will find some ways to kick the can down the road.
Ooh, they did it today. It was supposed to go to effect at midnight. Now they pushed it around to midnight tonight. They did it one more time.
We are spending monies we don't have. I was with Bill Gates yesterday, and we talked about it on the Charlie Rose Show. And I said, it's not like your household. In your household, people always say, oh, well, you can't spend money you don't have. That is true for your household, because nobody's going to loan you an infinite amount of money. When it comes to the United States federal government, people do seem to be willing to lend us an infinite amount of money. When you're a smaller country, it's questionable. So countries like the European countries, they do have to balance their budget. They really can't get away with what America can get away with. America, it may not be good policy, but America can get away with it for a long time. And our debt is so big and so many people own it that it's preposterous to think that they would stop selling us more. It's the old story. If you owe the bank $50,000, you got a problem. If you owe the bank $50 million, they got a problem. and that's the problem for the lenders. They can't stop lending us more money. Long term, you do have to do something about it because it hurts business confidence more than anything. But you don't have to overnight close everything down and raise everybody's taxes. And I think those that talk about expansion, they're not totally right, but there's a lot on their side. You can't just go and say overnight we're going to cut everything, because what the one thing that Congress and the president, and they're all in this together, sequestering was an idea that both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, both sides of the aisle, and both houses of Congress all were in favor of. They created something that was so terrible, nobody would ever do it. That was the idea. But they never thought about Plan B. What happens if they do it? Well, now they've got to do something about it because you can't do it. It's like having a nuclear bomb. It may be a great deterrent, but you can't use it, because once you start that, everybody's dead. So we'll see what happens here. The entitlements are what's going to take, I think, in a couple of years, all the 100% of the federal budget will be interest on the debt, defense spending, and entitlements. There will be no money for anything else. Now, we have to have air traffic control. You can't fly. You have to subsidize a post office. You can't get any mail. I mean, you have to have the FBI and the CIA to keep us from terrorism. I mean, there's all of these things the federal government does. You just can't do without them. And there's not going to be any money for it unless we figure out a ways to do it responsibly and continue to borrow.
And get rid of the admitted hundreds of billions of dollars worth of waste.
Well, you know.
Or do you think that's...
No, I've worked now in government for 11 years. There's always things. One of the problems is the definition of waste. You think the programs that I want are waste, and I think the programs that you want are waste. So it's not like it's somebody's taking wheelbarrows full of dollar bills and throwing them out the window. It's a question of definition, what is waste and what is not. And everything that we have was put in by Congress, signed by the president, and there was a reason for it or a constituency for it. Most of the tax breaks are designed to encourage or discourage economic activity. There's a reason for it. And to willy-nilly, without thinking about it, just cancel all of those breaks and willy-nilly cut everything without thinking about it is totally irresponsible. That, which is, I think, the attraction of Simpson Bowles was that they at least thought about it. Now, you may not agree with Erskine and Allen's decisions in their committee on what the taxes they would raise, what tax breaks they would cut, what services they would cut or scale back, but they at least had thought about it in the context of a total plan. The trouble with the way Congress works is I've got to deliver this for my constituency, John, so vote with me and then I'll vote for your favorite thing. That's the basis on which Congress has been doing legislation rather than looking at the whole thing. They worry about the politics of what's good for their reelection, not what's good for the country, which Simpson Bowles tried to do. Once again, you can disagree with it. If you read Simpson Bowles, there were enormous cuts. There were very cuts that a lot of people would really hate, and some of which I don't even agree with. Same thing on the tax side. But at least it was a thought-out plan, and they deserve an enormous amount of credit for all the work that those two guys have been doing and the lack of support they've gotten for it.
And
it's really sad.
The only way to reach the goal that you described in the down the road is to get the pain on both sides, and that was what this whole sequestration thing was supposed to have.
Both sides of Republican, Democrat, both sides of revenue increases, expense cuts. I had advocated for a long time, let all of the Bush-era tax cuts expire. It would have solved half of the budget deficit. It would have brought in about $4 trillion over the next 10 years. And then the other half, the other side would have to do with entitlements and that sort of thing. And if you don't cut entitlements, it's the rest of the joke. We can't live without the other services, and there's not a lot of money there. It's a small amount of money. And even if this is some waste, and there's always corruption, every big thing, it's so trivial, John. It costs you more to find it than what it would save. But nobody wanted to go and let all the Bush-era tax cuts expire because it's the middle class is going to have to pay. So what did we do? We penalized everybody over $250,000, which is a terrible idea. I don't have a problem with a graduated income tax. We have it. We've lived with that for, I don't know, 50, 75 years, whatever. That's fine. But to have a step function where you're a good guy on one side and a bad on another just goes against what America's all about, where everybody has the ability to move up. And then, to add insult to injury, the victory was they didn't tax the middle class. They did tax the wealthy, except they let the
payroll tax.
So the middle class
got whacked.
They wound up paying more. I mean, it is typical Washington, say one thing, and then they couched it in terms everybody took a victory lap and that sort of thing.
All right, let me let you sit down and get a piece of that bagel, and we'll take some commercial time here and also a reminder time. If you've got a question for Mayor Bloomberg before he's out of here at 9 o'clock, 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Minutes after 8 o'clock, John Gambling, Michael Bloomberg right here. Not to continue on Washington, but you were there this week, talked with the Vice President on the gun issue.
Yep.
And others.
Yep.
Any hopefulness there?
There is a lot of signs that Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, and incidentally, the NRA has supported Democrats as well as Republicans. It's not a partisan thing. Against sensible gun laws. You get the sense that they, that may break down when it gets to the details, but you get the sense that they understand they better do something. And it's incumbent on all of us to put, to keep the pressure on. The right now, here are the numbers. This year, it's about 11,000 murders will take place, about 30 a day, with handguns. And about 55 or 53, I think it is, suicides.
By handgun.
By handguns. 400 people get killed in a year with assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, so that's about one a day. So one a day with assault weapons, murders, and nobody uses assault weapons, and suicides, just too hard to do. So now what the good news is, when you look at New York City and you say, you know, these gun laws, they won't work. Well, they're not perfect, but in New York State, our gun laws are pretty good. And the Cuomo thing that he got passed, it makes it better. And in New York City, we have, with stop and frisk, kept a lot of the guns. Kids are afraid to carry them on the streets. If you wanted to commit suicide, it tends to be, not all the time, but it tends to be a spur-of-the-moment thing. And if you can't get a gun quickly, you might not kill yourself.
Might do it and might not do it.
And so if it's hard to get guns, you would think the suicide rate with guns would go down. New York City's suicide rate is half the national average. And the reason is New York's suicide rate with handguns is a tenth the national average.
Difficulty in getting guns.
Difficulty in getting guns, it saves an enormous amount of lives. Not perfect. Not going to stop everything. There's a lot of guns out there, more guns than people. But to the extent, so that's why it's so important to get a background check that is documented, and you can make sure it was done, and make sure that the current laws, which say, and the federal laws, and they've been tested in the, by the Supreme Court, is it constitutional in the Second Amendment? Yes. You shouldn't sell guns to minors. You shouldn't sell guns to criminals. You shouldn't sell guns to people with psychiatric problems. You shouldn't sell guns with substance abuse problems. And when you do the polling of NRA members with guns, 80-90% say, that's right, we shouldn't be doing that. And so there's a constituency growing, I think, to do that. Now, the NRA wants to stop anything because their attitude has always been, if you do one thing, no matter how sensible it is, it starts
the ball.
Down a, right. going down a path. So they are opposed generally to anything. Now, they did, I think back in 1999, say that they were in favor of background checks. But then, maybe it was either that or assault weapons. I've got to go back and look. And then they've changed.
So you are optimistic. I mean, you're trying to be optimistic that maybe something will come out of Washington.
I don't know. I would use the word optimistic. Let's say hopeful.
Okay. You mentioned Bill Gates.
But if you want to, if you want to do something. If you want, call your congressman, call your senator. And when the congressman or senator says, well, I'm going to vote the way you want, say, yeah, but I don't have votes in those other places. Your job, you're there every day with your fellow senators or congressmen. You pressure them.
You said that you were with Bill Gates yesterday or the day before. You have partnered with him, and this doesn't really have much to do with New York City other than that you, through your foundation, gave a significant amount of money to fight polio around the world.
Polio is one of those diseases you could wipe out, and you say it doesn't have anything to do with New York. If polio comes back,
well, sure, of course,
it would hurt New York too.
But my question when I heard about this was because the point that you just made, that it is something that is easily curable. Why is it that Pakistan,
preventive, not curable, preventive,
preventative? Why is it that countries like Pakistan that have a fair amount of wherewithal, why don't they do this on their own?
Well,
why is there the reluctance to do this?
Every government's got to do things. I mean, there are people here that don't want fluoride in water, think it's a communist plot. there are people, sorry, I still have something in my throat. I'm all right. They still have, there are lots, if you take a look at Pakistan, the Gates is really very innovative. What they do is they use aerial photos to see where there are groups of people living. There are towns that just aren't on the map.
No, I understand that, but it seems somewhat unusual in the polio circumstance that you and Bill Gates and others have to come to...
But there are people, John, that don't want to do this stuff. There have been something like 34 workers trying to give out the oral vaccine who've been murdered. Murdered.
Because the people think that there's something evil going on here.
Yes. It's a Western cabal trying to destroy them or their religion or something that's, maybe irrational to us, but this is what
they think. It is irrational, yeah, absolutely.
But not to them. And when, you have a right to your rationality, they've got a right to theirs, and so you got to work with them.
How do you get people to do that?
Well, I think Gates is still planning, thinks it'll take $5 billion over the next handful of years to eradicate the last few cases. Today, there's only a couple hundred.
That few? New.
Yeah, but there's that's number one. That's what's reported, and the reporting. One of the things my foundation has done is try to pay for getting real information of what people die from. Because if you can't find out, you don't know which diseases to go after, and a lot of the death certificates say "act of God," or there's nothing; it's blank, or there are no death certificates. And there could be diseases out there. You can say, well, why do we care? Well, number one, for humanitarian reasons, you should care. But number two, from a very practical point of view, if there's a disease out there you don't know about, it may strike us. In this day and age, diseases travel all over the world. People get on a plane. You can't stop that.
No, not at all. I mean, we remember
But Gates deserves a lot of credit. We give him $100 million. I think he and his wife have put something like $1.5 billion into the fight already, and he's getting others to do it.
All right. Well, continued, obviously, good work there. Why don't I take a break right here, Mr. Mayor? We'll do our half-hour break. Joe Bartlett's got more news, and let me tell you, we got a couple of lines open. Now's the time if you've got the question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. Here's Joe Bartlett.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue here, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling, and we shortly will include you in that, 800-321-0710, if you have a question for the mayor. The vendor fine issue, I know, has been one that has...
The vendors don't pay the fines, and the city council thinks if you reduce the amount, they will pay them more. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I keep saying this. Fines are very different than taxes. Taxes you got to pay. Fines, just don't do what we don't want you to do, and you don't have to pay them.
That's always seems.
Don't
a
run the red
solution.
Light, and you won't get a ticket. Okay,
you're absolutely right. Now let me ask you about the soda rule. Somebody or yourself called the governor and said, "Hey, can we?"
No, I was asked, should the state do it? And I wasn't actually talking about stores, although I'm happy to do that because that's what the state regulates. But we have an obesity problem throughout the world, throughout the country, and certainly throughout New York State. And I think this is a good way, without banning anything, to remind people that they should drink in moderation because it's not good for the health. But if they want to go ahead and drink and overdrink, let them do it. But they just have to carry two cups back or four cups rather than one. And that reminds you. So it's an educational thing. But it doesn't prevent you from doing it. And it doesn't mean the store has to charge you more. I mean, it's ridiculous to say, the store, the cost of an extra cup. If the cost of the cup, it really is determinant of whether they're in business, they aren't going to be in business. That's ridiculous. And we just got to do something. Obesity in New York City is going to kill more people this coming year than smoking. For the first time in the history of the world, more people will die from too much food than from too little food. Think about that. It's the first time in the history of the world. And it's all come about in the last 20 years.
Is it too? I was talking this morning that there was a survey out about the amount of it was couched the amount of housework people are doing, but really the story was more than that. The fact that we don't move around very much. The First Lady has made a big deal about this. Is it the food or is it the lack of moving?
The lack of exercise. Exercise is good for you. It strengthens your heart and lungs and everything else. It does burn calories, but you have to run for half an hour for one muffin, so it's not exercise, it is overeating. Exercise contributes, but the bottom line is it takes 2,000 calories to run your body. Beat your heart, breathe, let you talk, move around. even if you don't run, if you're pretty sedentary, it's just a good rule of thumb is 2,000 calories. If you eat less than 2,000 calories, you'll lose weight. If you eat more than 2,000 calories, you'll gain weight. Now, some things metabolize differently than others, and everyone says, oh, I should go on this kind of diet or that kind of diet. Don't eat and you'll lose weight. And if you ate, for example, 1,000 calories a day, you would lose half a pound a day. Oh, but I did, and I went up. Yeah, water retention will go up and down, but over a long period of time, there's an industry built around different diets. The bottom line is, if you
eat
less, you will weigh less, and you will live a lot longer. And exercise is something you certainly should do, but that's not the main thing if you're overweight.
This morning we were talking about the MTA fare increases, and my question was, why do people think that those costs are not going to continue? The MTA
and they're blaming Joe Loda
is crazy. Yeah.
Joe Loda certainly didn't do anything wrong. He ran the railroad.
It's Albany that controls that. My question, though, my question to you is, everything is getting more expensive, and I think what has people on edge is the fact that life around them is getting more expensive and their salaries are not keeping pace with it.
If an economist would show that, because you would think salaries, which are a big part of expenses, would be going up on average along with the cost.
You would think, but there's no indication of
well,
that.
Well, some of it's the way things are moved around. For example, let's assume that instead of raising the fares, you paid for the MTA with tax revenues. That didn't save you any money. They're still taking the money out of your pocket. They're taking it out in taxes. Now, you can argue, well, they're taking out of more people, not just the strap hangers. They're taking out of everybody's pocket, but you're part of everybody. I don't know. We all want more services, which is one of the reasons that government keeps going up. People always say, when I came into office, you know, your budget was 50 and today it's 70 or whatever the numbers are. Yeah, but we still balance our budget. Our tax revenues have gone up with our expenses, and it's a very different city today. We do a lot of things that the public wants that we didn't do 10 years ago, and the same thing with a comparison to 20 years ago. So it's like the definition of middle class. I've always thought that it used to be, when I grew up, you too, one breadwinner per family to be in middle class. Mm-hmm. You know, the old Norman Rockwell, mother at home, father goes off. Today, the world isn't mother and father. Many single-parent families, higher divorce rate, out of wedlock births. And to be in middle class, a lot of families have two breadwinners. But it's not quite a fair comparison, I think an economist would say, because what the middle class expects today is different. Two cars in a family, and a vacation overseas, and they want all the latest iPhones, iPads, high-definition television, big screens. So it's hard to do some of these comparisons. For example, the MTA is a good example, I suppose. We have a lot better cars than we did before. They're more reliable. They're more comfortable. We clean them better. I remember the subways when in the 1960s covered with graffiti. Today the policing is better and the maintenance is better. They used to break down all the time. I ride the subway almost every day, and I was held in some station for about 2 minutes listening to the announcer who happens
to crash all the time in the 70s.
Yeah, too. I mean, so it's a better service. I think the same thing. I don't take the Metro North or Long Island Railroad, but I think those cars, when I look at them go by, look like newer and better than what we did. So it's not fair. There are built-in inflators, inflation and wages and pension benefits. The pension benefits and the health care costs for the workers in the MTA are doing the same thing to the MTA that the municipal workers for New York City are doing. In our administration's history, pension costs went from $1.5 billion to $8.5 billion in 10, 11 years.
And the federal government has an even bigger problem.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's not so much that things cost more. We're just buying more things. And if you don't want to pay more for your MTA ride or for the services in the city, then make the case that we should do less, have fewer employees, or not be as generous with the pensions. And the pensions typically come from Albany. Certainly in the city's case, it's Albany that votes them. Now, we're responsible for wages, but we pay the pension costs, we pay the health care costs, but the it's Albany that votes those things. Albany would say, what me, what, you know, they only get paid X number of $1,000, and it's not a lot, and they take great pride or angst in that they have low salaries, but they certainly vote a lot of money for an awful lot of things. Which may be right, may be wrong, but that's the explanation of what's happened.
All right. What does Dennis Wolcott tell you about the state test coming up in April with the new parameters, new curriculum?
You know, if you test different things, or you have different measures where you define proficiency was just an arbitrary thing. The real question is, how are we doing versus the rest in New York City versus the rest of the state? You can't compare our students to the rest of the country or the world because there is no common test. There's actually one international one, but they don't use it very much. But what all students in New York State, including New York City, take the same test. So if we do better or worse versus the rest of the state, you can make the case that our great teachers are doing a better job or worse job, if that's what the numbers come out. And so the real problem with changing the tests and improving the curriculum, which they're doing. They're going to a much more rigorous curriculum.
This core curriculum.
100% in favor of it. But if you want to write a story unfairly, you can then say, oh, well, look, the students didn't do as well as last year.
That's what's
going
to happen. You know that's what's going to happen.
I understand that. Hopefully the public is smart on that, because if you made decisions on that, you would hurt all of these kids. And the irresponsible journalism that tries to create sensational stories, just it isn't good. Our teachers don't like it. It's not fair to them, and it's certainly not fair to the students.
All right. I was reading the story this morning that as part of this switch over to the core curriculum, there's a $56 million book charge, which I gather in the, you know, when you look at the scheme
our budget is $22 billion. Right. What do you want to talk about? Come on, we spend that for books every day.
Are you an advocate of books or tablets?
I'm too old-fashioned. The thing that worries me about tablets is we think if you give a kid a computer, you've solved the problem.
You still have to figure out how to do the work.
You still need a teacher in front of the class. And we also have the problem when you have computers there, then there's the pornography and the social media and the distraction of games and that sort of thing. A lot of the testing, a lot of the research that's been done lately does not bode well for those that think distance learning works in the community colleges. I think there's been more than one study that shows the more the kids take courses from over the internet, the worse they do. And I think it was Bloomberg View that wrote the editorial. Somebody wrote an editorial saying, you know, look, maybe a Nobel Prize winner is driven enough to do the work, but the average person, I certainly wasn't at the time, you had to force me to do work. That's what the average kid. And it's hard to do that with distance learning. So that doesn't work. And where they rely on a lot of tools in school, in the end, education is about three things: teacher quality. It's like real estate, location. I get in trouble every time I say this, but I would do anything to have better quality teachers, even if it meant bigger class size, even if it meant them standing rather than sitting. That's in the end what really makes a difference. That human being who looks the student in the eye, adjust the curriculum right then and there based on instinct to what's in the child's interest.
To your point, Yahoo, I think it was this week, announced that they're going to do away with telecommuting, that they want everybody back in the office.
I've always said telecommuting is one of the dumber ideas I've ever heard. Yes, there are some things you can do at home, but having a chat line is not the same thing as standing at the water cooler. And standing at the water cooler is where you get a lot of ideas and information. It's a euphemism personal dialogue.
One of the things I've questioned and I've wondered about is that many institutions, and I mean the best, Stanford's and all the rest of them, Virginia and Princeton, everybody's jumping on this online course.
Yeah, I had dinner actually with the president of Johns Hopkins just this past week and some other people to talk about exactly that. I'm really... Number one, the business model doesn't work. If you give away what you sell, you don't have any revenues to generate what you sell. So you can't do that. And also, we learn a lot from being in the classroom, from being in the luncheon hall, from walking the corridors and sitting outside and going off and having a drink, and a lot of what you learn in community colleges or in four-year colleges is to mature, to make some social mistakes, which hopefully aren't long-term and serious, to have arguments and realize that you got to work with people and sell your ideas and listen to others. It's not so much that Columbus sailed the ocean blue and discovered America in 1492. That's not terribly useful. But it's the reason you study it as much as anything is, I mean, it's useful for historians and to put things in context, which we don't seem to do. But it's because then you learn how to study, how to think, how to gather information, where to go for it. And when you have a parent that say, oh, this is so wonderful, my child, look at the reports that they're doing in junior high school. And they have all of this. There's links to this and there's video and colors and graphs. Yeah, but the kid doesn't understand what the subject is. And I gave a lecture the other day on education. I said, you know, all these universities are saying, I want, in order to apply, you have to write essays and that sort of thing. And they all expect you to have cured cancer, written the great American novel, fed the poor, you know, been an Olympic athlete. I want the kid who has said, yeah, I worked in a gas station, and I also went home and took care of my baby brother while my parents went to work. And, you know, then I set the table, and I, you know, didn't quite walk to school in bare feet and studied Abraham Lincoln by the fire. But you want, there's other things to learn.
Absolutely. I wondered about that myself. It's interesting that you had the conversation recently yourself. 10 minutes before 9 o'clock, Mr. Mayor, we're going to get to the telephones in just a second, but I need one more time out here, and we'll be right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, here we go. 5 before 9 o'clock. A few minutes for you. Let's start with line number 3. It happens to be Christy in Breezy Point. Hello, Christy.
Hi, John. Hi, Mayor Mike. How are you today?
Good, Christy. How are you?
Good. Mayor Mike, I'm calling to say thank you. I don't know if anybody's thanked you for the rapid repair program that you did. Although we teased and called it the not-so-rapid repair program because it had a lot of glitches, it worked. It really worked. It was the first of its kind. And it worked, really worked.
Well, Christy, you're nice to say so. You know, when people are building buildings, the tough parts, the long, that take time, getting the permits, assembling the land, then digging the hole, then putting in the foundation, and people say, nothing's happening, let's change the management, change the developer, and somebody else comes in, and then all of a sudden the steel goes up. Oh, look how rapidly and how much better the next person did. It was an innovative thing, Christy. I'd love to tell you it was my idea. Deputy Mayor Kaz Holloway was the one that came up with the idea, and he's done a spectacular job, and we have a great woman running the program, and we're almost done. We're getting close. There's a handful of stragglers all of a sudden coming in. We've said enough. You got to have a cutoff date someday, but there's still some people that are coming in. And
you should get Cass Holloway to run for mayor.
There's a lot of candidates running, and the public's going to have a choice.
Absolutely. That was a good cover. Michelle in Queens, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg.
Hi.
It must be Mayor Appreciation Day because I called last Friday. I'm the mom that daughter might lose her snap.
Oh, right. Yes, I remember that.
And I'm just going to say thank you to you also. You and the people who called me resolved the problem right away.
Right.
And I want listeners to know that you and your administration do care about the problems of individuals. So you have my deepest appreciation.
All 8.4 million people are listening to the John Gambling Show, and they're all going to think, hey, isn't this great?
Two in a row.
This is going to be a good day, and the sun's out, too.
All right. Karen, you're next. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, John. Hi, Mayor.
Hi.
First, Mayor, I want to thank you for all your work in public health. It's been tremendous.
Great, thanks.
My question is, I have visitors coming from Europe, and they are so disappointed that Ellis Island is still closed due to the Hurricane Sandy damage.
And Statue of Liberty.
Ken
Salazar is the Secretary of the Interior. We've been working with him. I don't know, but I'll try to get you a date, and we'll give it to John, and he'll tell you if there is a date. I think there's just a lot of work. I don't know, but I'll We have been talking to him, I know, and trying to get
there was a tremendous amount of damage that most people aren't aware of.
It's a great tourist thing. People love to come as Karen's friends. So we're doing everything we can to help him. But it's a federal government project, and I will get you, let's say, by Monday, okay? And
that's
listen
fine.
To the John Gambling Show this time on Monday, which I'm sure you do.
You can't do it faster than that? What's the matter?
Well, I'm going to try today, but you'll be off the air.
You're right. Lloyd in Manhattan, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, Lloyd.
How are you doing, Mayor? You're
good.
Doing a phenomenal job.
Thank you.
I gotta say, I must commend you.
Something
on,
in the water today.
I know, full moon or something. I love it.
I must commend you on the express lane bus going across 34th Street, but there's a problem in the evening when people get out of Penn Station. There are so many people that think the dedicated lane is an additional sidewalk.
Right, yeah.
And the buses have to play chicken with them.
I'll talk to the transportation commissioner and have her take a look. Maybe we need a fence where you can only cross into the bus lane at the corner or something. I'll ask her. But, you know, it's dangerous going in the bus lanes, and it's annoying to the buses and the people on the buses to slow it down.
You had that problem in some of the Times Square area.
Yeah, but Times Square, we just made it all pedestrian, and you see the number of people there is still that's one of the best things that we've ever done for traffic is better, but it's enormous benefit to the people who live and work in that area and tourists. But
what's the status on the Ferris wheel in Staten Island? Is that still on?
I checked, which was about a week and a half ago with Amanda Burden, she was pretty sure it was going to get done. Yeah, they had to go through city planning, and city planning, you know, does things like saying, well, you know, the stores, you're too close to the water, they need pedestrian areas, and you could beautify it a little bit, and those sort of things, which generally are things that help the developer as well, makes the property more valuable. And she was optimistic that it was on schedule, so hopefully it gets done.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good addition. Mr. Mayor, that's it. Our time is up. The theme is rolling.
And I've got to get you, if we can get some information on the Statue of Ellis Island.
Give our friends at Fairway a hello, shout out.
I'm going to have a bagel with a schmear if they have it.
Enjoy. Thank you very much. We've got more to go here on the John Gambling Show, including right after our news at 9 o'clock. A big fan of this lady's, Rib McIntyre, will join us all. Right here at Newstalk Radio 710 WOR, 9 o'clock.
Mark Simone.